You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
A few months ago, I went on a tour with the Camden Tour Guides Association that was specifically designed for blind and partially sighted people. We visited the Foundling Museum in Camden and discovered this wonderful place by running our hands across the statues and ancient tables, feeling the clothes worn by abandoned babies and listening to the sounds they would have heard. I've got a recording of that trip I'll play to you at the end, but first I want you to listen to this conversation I had with the marvellous guides behind it all.
So I'm sitting in a cafe under the Tottenham Court Road with Peter and Elizabeth from the Camden Tour Guides.
Hello.
Hello.
And with Trevor, who's been helping them organise tours for the blind and for the visually impaired.
Hello.
Great. And we've got together to talk about these tours and what the experience has been. So let's jump right in with an obvious question to start with, which is, how does a tour for the blind and visually impaired differ from all your other tours that you organise, Peter?
Well, most tours, you're telling people to look at buildings or to look at a street, and then you're informing them about its history or something of interest. And when you're dealing with blind and partially sighted visitors, you've got to think of other ways of communicating what is around people. So you may be inviting them to feel something, or you might have to describe it in quite a lot more detail than you would do if they were able to look at it. When I first started doing these tours, I wasn't quite sure how I would cope with people who couldn't see anything. And it was only when I started working with Trevor that I realized there were all sorts of other ways of informing people about things. For instance, if you take them into a church, the sound that you get, depending on the height of the church and its acoustics, really almost paints a sound picture of the interior of the church.
So, Trevor, you've been involved from the very start then, from the outset.
Yes, I have, and I've actually been working with Peter for a few years now. We did meet, I believe it was back in 2012, and I suppose it was interesting because at the time we were doing a little bit of filming together, and one of the first things we did was actually to be walking in a farm environment, which was very interesting personally because obviously you need a guide to walk around with you, you know, telling you about the steps and the sort of the terrain really more than anything. And that was the first day I really met Peter, and he offered to guide me at the time. And I'm not sure if it was your first occasion or not in actually guiding somebody who had a visual impairment. Right. So, I mean, I found very early on that he was very good at describing things, and obviously questions, you know, a few questions later discovered that he was a guide, so I could then understand, you know, why his descriptions were so good. But we worked from that day onward, and knowing that he was a really good guide, we started to speak about what he did and what he was looking to organise. And I suppose I came on board really then because I was able to go on some of these trial walks and try to suggest things that could actually, you know, make a lot of difference for somebody who is actually blind or visually impaired.
How, if someone out there listening is kind of interested in this and they're blind or they've got a visual impairment, what would you say, how different is the experience of being on one of these Peter's tours and Elizabeth's tours to maybe any tour of a, you know, stately home or a museum or whatever they've been on before?
The difference is that guides like Peter and Elizabeth are aware of what they can do to make those tours better for those people who are on them. So, I mean, of course, you know, tour guides all over, no matter what the situation, are very good, very, you know, informative and what have you. But here we've got a situation where we've had these discussions, we've been on trial walks, we've been through every room or every street, and we've stopped and thought about how we can make this more accessible. So I feel like going on one of these walks allows you to leave at the end feeling that you've gotten a lot more out of it because you've been able to have a lot of description, not only about how a building looks, but to just pause and take a quick sniff at the, you know, the scents in the air. And senses are a big part of this. I mean, we all have, you know, our sense of, you know, taste, touch, smell. We have that all the time, but because most of the information we take on board every day goes through our vision, sometimes we fail to use our other senses maybe as much as we should.
And it's quite remarkable that once you start doing exactly what Trevor has said, what you then detect. You know, buildings all have different aromas to them. If you go into churches, some churches smell of incense. Some smell of coffee. It's because many of them have little coffee bars in the back. Some, quite frankly, smell of death. They're very musty, sort of damp places. And consequently, you can really almost do an aroma description of places that you visit. For instance, when we came here to the cafe, there was a wonderful smell of fresh bread being baked.
So, and now, well, Elizabeth, you are one of the Camden tour guides. So, tell me about some of the tours that you've organised so far with the Camden tour guides.
Well, we've done this very much with Peter and Trevor and very much in the coattails of the work they've done. But we've done, so far, we've organised three different tours. One was around the redevelopment around King's Cross, and that was very exciting because there's these huge new spaces opened up. And again, we learnt from Trevor, we couldn't just say, this is a big new space. Yeah. We had to try and give a sense of how big this space was. And if you're like me, you're not always clear, you know, what's feet and meters and yards and things like that. So you had to think in a slightly different way, how big was this space? Which direction were you looking in? Were you looking south or north or east or west? And this all came from you, that it was the sort of painting the picture rather than just saying to people, look at this.
That's true, actually, because you may get, and it was one of the things I actually told all of the guides, at times you may get questions from those who are, you know, visually impaired or blind, that you think, that to yourself, you may think, oh, that's not really, I don't consider it to be too important, but actually it is important because they're getting an idea of maybe the height or the breadth of a building or something like that. And the one little piece of information that may not seem too important to you as a guide could be of paramount importance to that person, because it helps them to put the jigsaw together.
Especially for Trevor, I guess, would you say that you find that actually, if you, judging by your other senses, do different attractions maybe become the best attractions in London? So, you know, I mean, does something like a particularly wonderful space to be in actually become, is that more of an attraction than you know, everyone likes looking at Nelson's Column? But
right. Yeah, sometimes it does. It does happen that way. I mean, it can happen with attractions. It can happen with, if you go to watch a show or something like that, venues that are really interesting to you may not quite be as interesting to other people, but it's because mainly of the atmosphere, the sounds, the, you know, the feeling you get. I've often said to Peter, gosh, there's a totally different feeling in this room than there was in the room next door. And I feel, and I always make sure I tell him what I feel, partly because it's interesting to talk about it, but also because you never know when a snippet of information like that may prove useful to a future walk.
And I think that's really interesting, Trevor, because what I find in doing these walks, we're developing a walk around Camden Town for visually impaired people. And actually that's quite a high risk strategy in some ways, because we walk by the canal and there's no barriers. It would be easy for people to fall into the canal, frankly. But going round with Trevor, it was really exciting because the questions you were asking makes it more interesting for me as a guide, actually, because we were in the West Yard and we were talking about the food and all the different smells and the feeling of the cobble granites under your feet and touching the railings by the canal.
Absolutely.
And it makes it a more interesting walk for me to think of it through your eyes.
And not only that, I mean, that's obviously, of course, a great point, but it also brings it home that even if you can see, you know, it's still great to touch the railings.
Exactly.
And it's still great to touch the stone or the brickwork, because you'll find things that you never thought. You'll say, oh, that feels this way or that way. And you'll remember that. But most of the time we do. We just walk along, we stop, we look up, we say, oh yeah, that looks really nice. You have a description of whatever it is, you move on. Yeah. But nobody ever gets really, if I can say it, like I suppose like an artist would, at one with the building.
Yeah.
You know?
So what would a kind of, have you got any kind of dream tours that you'd like to do? I don't know, like through the Camden sewers or, you know, any, have you got any kind of great, like dreams or wild ideas you've ever had about what might be a really great tour? Anyone?
Well, I'd love to take Trevor and other colleagues who were up for this to Hampstead, because I think a tour of Hampstead without relying on all the visual clues would be really engaging. Going up and down the steps, feeling the wind, going to the different viewpoints, smelling the smells, hearing the sounds. I think that would be a great excursion.
I have to agree with that. I mean, anywhere really, this is the thing, it's, of course, we're talking right now about, for example, you know, Camden and surrounding areas, but this could be on a scale of, I feel for me, that it can also extend into other areas, because there are many, many guides who could probably get involved with this in the long run, and I feel that That for me is why I'm very keen to carry on assisting with these tours and future tours that may not be in these areas as well, because it sort of brings it to other places and it introduces it to other people.
Wonderful, yeah.
And I think I'd really like to see us exploring some of the museums, more of the museums in Camden, because I think the museums need to understand as well that actually making tours accessible is really important for everyone. And it would be great, because often walking guides tend to be focused on people like themselves, so people who can see, who can hear, who are very mobile. And it would be great to think that we're extending to all sorts of people and making tours accessible for everyone.
It's about being open and about saying, okay, you know, there's a opportunity to go and do something, and you think about it, and I feel that the best thing often to say is, why not? Why not go? Because you'll learn something.
Brilliant.
You'll learn something. You may teach others something, and that everybody learns together, don't they, really? That's how I see it.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you very much. I think that's been a fascinating discussion. I look forward to hearing all about the next talk and coming along again.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully this has left you desperate to go on one of Elizabeth, Trevor and Peter's tours. To whet your appetite just a little bit more, here is a short recording from the tour they led to the Foundling Museum earlier in the year.
Come in a bit closer, everybody.
Please come in closer. I've got a loud voice, but not that loud. You come a bit closer, please. Now, I think you can probably all feel the breeze on your face. Mm-hmm. And that's unusual in London. And that's really because we're in a delightful corner of London on the edge of somewhere called Brunswick Square. And why was the Foundling Museum set up here? It's all thanks to a man whose statue you're standing in front of. A remarkable man called Thomas Coram. That's his shoe. And that that you're holding now is the Royal Charter and the seal. Benedictine, come round here. Can you feel it?
Oh, fingers.
Will you?
That's the seal.
This one?
Yeah. And that's your problem. It's rolled up.
Come forward, don't be shy. And don't smell it. So you need to be quiet. We just need to be quiet. Can you hear anything?
Yes.
You could hear some birds. And a gentleman by the name of Chris Watson went out into the park on dawn, and he actually recorded the bird sounds that he could hear there. And he then went back there at dusk and recorded the sounds of the birds again. Don't forget, it's probably migratory birds that are out there that he's recording. So they might well have been relations to the birds that were there hundreds of years before, because migratory birds always come back to where they were born.
If it wasn't quite so substantial, they wouldn't have bothered keeping something.
It goes back to the fact that a craftsman actually built.
Yes, he looks as though he had quite strong features. Yes, quite sensitive eyes.
Is it that dog is looking for food?
How many meters?
Yeah.
Oh,
15? 15 more than that, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe more?
Yeah, maybe more.
It's very echoey.
Yeah. It's very nice.
Oh, got handle.
What is this? What is this?
That?
What is this?
A belt, is it?
Is it a belt?
What was that you were playing? It was lovely.
Huh?
What was that piece?
My own compositions.
They're your own compositions?
Yeah.
Oh, right, amazing. I thought it was Handel.
Yeah.
And how's the piano? Is it good?
That to me is moving, to realise how many children would have passed through and grown up and probably not even, obviously, of course, recognise their parents if they ever came back.
So being able to touch it sort of makes you feel like it was more real, puts you more...
Absolutely, because if you just sat in the middle of a room, yes, of course, you're going to get some useful information, but by actually touching it, it makes you feel like you're sort of connecting with it. You're almost there, you know, in the best way you can imagine it.
Hello, can I ask, did you enjoy the tour?
Oh, I did, it was lovely.
It was.
I never heard of it before.
You never heard before of the Camden tour guides or anything? Yeah.
Never knew it existed. And I'm 57 years in this country.
What did you make of the tour?
Yeah, really interesting, very nice. And it was good that you could actually touch the statues and feel the edges and the textures of the seats and the chair and everything. I thought it was very good.
Have you and yeah, do you feel like it's different than, I mean, how does it, is it a really different experience?
Well, it's the first time I've been to anything like this since I've lost my sight. So it's quite a new thing for me. So I'll do it again. I thought it was very good, very educational.
You're listening to a download from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org